Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by Sam, and we're going to be discussing Marvel Team-Up number 131 to 134 from 1983. Sam, how you doing tonight?
I'm wonderful, John. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Now, this is admittedly a somewhat random assortment of these issues. It was four contiguous issues, and I picked them because I recall enjoying the Spider-Man and Frogman, 131 issue with White Rabbit and stuff, and then we get a two-parter with Mr. Fantastic and the Fantastic Four. How can you go wrong when Spider-Man's hanging out with them? And then we end on Jack of Hearts, who's a somewhat obscure character, but I think a cool character. But this was, at the time, one of the two main team-up books over at Marvel. We'd already done two-in-one with Project Pegasus not too long ago.
Yep.
So figured it'd be fun to visit the Spider-Man title. And of course, these things have a rotating guest character, every issue and such, and often rotating creative team and stuff. So it's an anthology title with a little bit of stability because of the lead character. But, I mean, just as we would see over in DC Comics Presents or Brave and the Bold or also in Marvel 2-in-1, what you get from month to month on these titles, it can vary wildly, or you can get a really good run from a creative team for a bit until they hand it off to somebody else. So I think as we go through these four issues, I know I certainly had very differing opinions on some of them. I'm imagining you did as well.
They were all unique. They were all kind of campy and lighthearted, which is something I love. So I actually really enjoyed all four of them. There's one I probably enjoyed a little less than the rest, and that's 133, and we can talk about that when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really enjoyed them, and I'll be honest, obviously I know the Fantastic Four are. Every other character that appeared in these issues, I pretty much have no familiarity. Oh well, and Spider-Man, obviously.
Yeah, when you've got Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four, I mean, those are headliners, of course people are going to know them. I think the average person on the street is going to know them for the most part.
Yep.
Frogman, Jack of Hearts, White Rabbit. Yeah, these are obscure characters.
And the Dr. Faust guy or whatever?
He's reasonably obscure, kind of, sort of. He's shown up in recent years over in Captain America, and I think he tends to associate with the Red Skull and such.
Okay, and I'm sure at some point you'll be able to tell me a little bit more. Well, even Everyman, I don't know if these are reoccurring characters or they were one-offs for these books.
Dr. Faust had appeared before, as had Everyman.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say Everyman had appeared a lot before.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, this is one of those things that when you're a writer and you've got one of these books, either you've got a story you're just dying to tell with, Spider-Man and so-and-so, or you've got to come up with one.
Yep.
And what is the case in a couple of these things, because most of this is written by J.M. DeMatteis, other than that fourth one, 134, which was done by Bill Mantlo.
Yes.
Now, that has Jack of Hearts. Guess who created Jack of Hearts? Bill Mantlo.
And again, I'm not sure if we were supposed to read it, but since it was in the order, technically, I read it. The annual, number 6, falls between 133 and 134, also written by Bill Mantlo with Cloak and Dagger and the New Mutants.
Well, and he co-created Cloak and Dagger.
Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't read the annual. I just read the four. But Everyman was created by J.M. DeMatteis, or co-created, I should say.
Yep.
So there's a lot of, what toys do you have in your part of, in this case, the Marvel Universe, that you want to play with and stuff? And, if you spent the time to create the character, yeah, why not reuse them?
Yep.
But with 131 here, Frogman, I'm not sure if had appeared before or not. Leapfrog, his father, had appeared before. So, again, these are characters that are, pretty much one-off villains, if not literally. Leapfrog, I think, had shown up in a few issues of Daredevil back in the day, and that's about it. So, you know, if you're a comic writer, you need to tell a story. What would happen if we take this character and his kid decides, you know, well, dad was a villain, I'll try to rehabilitate the name or something. And then, again, White Rabbit was created in this issue.
Yep.
And man, we've got 22 pages here. They've got to establish White Rabbit. They've got to establish Frogman. We get a friend of Spider-Man's who's got, or Peter Parker's, I should say, who's got money problems and stuff, so we've got to spend a little time on that. Got to understand the status quo for Frogman and his father and such. Well, White Rabbit's actually got to commit a crime or two. They've got to go fight White Rabbit and stuff. Got to have a way to resolve all of this. Got to have the friend of Peter's kind of intersect with the story. All of that and more in 22 pages.
Yes.
It's astounding how much they put in here. And yeah, it's still a lighthearted, fun story.
It absolutely is kind of lighthearted and fun, and yeah.
I was surprised how much White Rabbit reminded me of Alice from the Batwoman show.
Well, and I'm trying to remember if it was early New 52 or kind of right before. Wasn't there a, I think it was even called White Rabbit character in the Bat books at that time?
Was there?
Yeah, there was. It's from right around that same time.
Not that I recall. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but if so, I'm blanking on that entirely.
Let me take a quick look. See what Google has to say. Batman the Dark Knight number... Yes, it was the one written by... So it was the New 52 launch, and that was the David Finch one. And he created a White Rabbit character that looks, well, I would say acts, but has a very different story than this one.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. I've forgotten all about that character.
Yep.
I wonder if that character had really shown up, you know, any more since. Interesting. I mean, a character like that with the Alice in Wonderland type thing, there are going to be tons of characters like that, and particularly with Mad Hatter and stuff like that, and Alice over in the Batman family of villains.
Yep.
Getting a White Rabbit sooner or later is not too surprising.
Yeah. Like I said, it looks like she did that first arc of Dark Knight. She's also in Arkham War, which is where the crime syndicate shows up and that era of the New 52. So she's kind of in the first three quarters of the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like she's been in much since then.
Yeah. I think this White Rabbit here may have shown up more than that, because she's been a member of one of the Sinister Six-ish groups. Matter of fact, she's currently showing up in the recent Sinister War thing. So they've used her over the years in the Spider-Man stuff. But, you know, different take on the nutcase inspired by the Alice in Wonderland stuff than Alice in Batwoman, but some definite similarities here and there.
Oh, absolutely.
And Frogman trying to become a hero and such, and totally not cut out for it. And Spider-Man trying to constantly tell him, yeah, you're not meant for this. Was kind of funny. And I've got to imagine we've seen Frogman a time or two since this. I just don't recall. I think they did a follow-up to this story at some point.
What about the father that's kind of sort of working with the police?
Again, he had shown up back in the day in Daredevil as Leapfrog.
Okay.
Don't know if he shows up much before or after this.
And I'm assuming Roger, right, was the kid?
Eugene was the kid. Was Frogman.
No, wasn't Roger the friend of Peter's?
Oh, the friend of Peter's.
Sorry.
I think so.
He kind of went back to obscurity.
Yeah, I had no clue who that was. Got other it. Than, you know, somebody who was going through the same, you know, financial woes that Peter usually goes through.
Yeah, and there was that old weird convoluted reward and the mother and surgery and...
Yeah, the whole bit with the reward and how everything kind of comes together at the end to where everyone who needs the money gets the money and stuff.
Yes.
Other than Peter, of course. Convoluted and contrived, but, you know, hey, it worked. It was,
yeah.
I kind of figured it was going to go that way.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, definitely. It was a lot of fun. I said the White Rabbit character is interesting. Frogman's unique. I don't know what to say about this design. There's something about it that feels off, but I don't know what it is.
For Frogman?
Yeah, he looks like a lumpy sock puppet of a frog. That makes any sense?
He does, and he looks almost like a a cross between a cosplayer and a scuba diver.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like just an incredibly impractical suit on so many levels.
Yes.
It's, yeah.
And the weird, like, belt around his chest, and a lot of, it's just weird.
Well, that's for the backpack, but what is the backpack? I guess that does the hydraulics for the springs or something?
Yeah, I don't know. It's
I'm
weird.
Sure somewhere in the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, maybe they diagram what all that stuff does or something. I don't know.
But yeah, like I said, I kind of love campy fun stuff, which this clearly was. The mm-hmm. issue, it was, well, like you pointed out, there's a ton of story. I don't exactly want to say it was a quick read, but it certainly wasn't laborsome. It you know, it didn't feel like, oh my God, I got to sit. No, it was fun and breezy, and I was flipping pages and enjoying it, and it felt like it went by quickly, even if it took some time.
Yeah, it was an easy read, but it is a mid-80s comic, and there's a ton of words on the page.
Yep.
But ones that are fast and easy to go through and kind of pull you through the story.
Yeah, that's it. It really, every page was pulling you through. That there was no slow moments, that's for sure.
Well, and like Alice on Batwoman, that's a kind of a larger-than-life character that just chews up the scenery, White Rabbit here is very similar, and Frogman is fun to watch, and of course Spider-Man's easy to read and such, that there's nothing that's kind of, you know, making it a slog or anything like that.
No, but and it's only a page or two. The slowest part is the setup of Roger's mother, and that's kind of the slowest part of the whole issue.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a page or two there, and it's not only just an exposition dump, but it's, you know, a depressing one at that.
You know,
oh, woe is me because. It's like, I don't need to read that, but
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but it was a fun issue, a good done-in-one story, expanded the Marvel Universe a little here and there, and built on what had gone before.
Yep, absolutely.
So, very enjoyable issue and such.
Yes. And as John and I have recently discovered, significantly more valuable than we would have expected.
Yeah, when you told me what this was going for on, I pulled it up on mycomicshop.com, and they've got four copies, three of which are CGC graded, so okay, maybe it's a little premium for that or whatever.
They're all CGC graded.
I didn't think the fine, very fine one
was
CGC graded.
Fair enough.
And that's like $90.
Yeah, and like the 9.4 is like 500.
I'm like, I don't know why. I mean, yeah. First appearance of White Rabbit. Got J.M. DeMatteis on the script. Pencils by Cary Gamble. Inks by Mike Esposito. Cover by Paul Smith. I mean, not a bad creative team, but nothing here makes me think this should be head and shoulders above the issues around it, much less by how much it is.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those weird things because it was one of the ones I kind of had to track down and figure out how to get. And I'm like, oh, let's see if back issues. I went, no, my lordy, that was not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
If anyone can explain why this issue is worth that, I'd be curious.
Yep.
I mean, I picked it up at cover price, I believe. So, you know, yep. I'm happy.
Exactly. You've been sitting on it all that time. What appreciation.
yeah. I wonder if I've got more that are worth more than I realize. All right, moving on to that next issue, 132, with Mr. Fantastic teaming up with Spider-Man.
Yep.
This was a fun one, but a bit of a head-scratcher at the beginning. We've got, you know, Reed tinkering at home, and then his, you know, guy comes, it's me, Larry, Uncle Reed, and I'm like, Uncle?
Yeah.
Does he have a nephew? What's going on with this? And it takes a little bit to, you know, kind of play out. It's not really his literal nephew. It's the son of a good friend of Reed's. And this guy had been institutionalized because he's a little nuts. Turns out, by a little nuts, he was actually a supervillain at one point in Captain America. And he's kind of back and, you know, kind of wackiness ensues.
And what is this absorption thing he uses on Reed? Do we get any real explanation of that other than whatever it exists?
Well, Larry went by Everyman back in Captain America, and we get the full page kind of info dump on that.
Yep.
And he's got this device, and I was never quite clear how he got it, but his whole thing was it seemed unfair that some people are better, stronger, smarter, wealthier than others. So somehow this ray gun evens things out.
Yeah.
And it's funny because around this time, give or take a few years, there was the Shadow War of Hawkman over at DC, and they had an Absorbiscon, or I forget what they had called their device there, but it was explaining how on Thanagar, everybody was just kind of equal and homogenous. Nobody was really that much smarter or that much better looking than anyone else, because they had this kind of device to kind of, you know, even the playing field. So, of course, when Reed gets hit by this thing here, he's no longer super smart.
Yep.
So he's got to deal with that through the issue and such. This was not a bad issue, but it wasn't a great issue either.
Yeah, well, and how Spider-Man gets involved isn't exactly clear or make a whole lot of sense. He just kind of walks in.
He was dropping by for some reason that wasn't entirely clear?
No, not at all.
Oh, he was trying to figure out how they were making money and he wasn't, I think it was.
You see Spider-Man, Santa's part. Yeah, because it just kind of, it's one of those weird things where it says, meanwhile, at the Baxter building, and Spider-Man walks in and Reed's explaining some of what happened, and I'm like, huh?
Yeah, well, on the page where he's swinging in, he's mentioning, Spidey's mentioning his financial stuff, and you're going to go for advice, you know, never hurts to ask a big brain like Reed.
Yeah.
Of course, Spider-Man doesn't remember that they've got, you know, defenses on this building, you know, when he goes in there, but, you know, so be it. I'm not a big fan of Everyman's mask.
The weird, like, faceless, no-face mask, almost. I mean, he's got eyes and nostrils and a mouth, but, like, no other definition. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's like an attempt at the Questions mask over at DC, but not really committing to it, so you've got the nose, mouth, and eye slits or whatever, and it just looks like he's, you know, poorly drawn man.
Yeah, that's one way to, yeah.
And again, his whole bit of trying to level the playing field and nobody, you know, appreciating that. I feel for him, but not much. And how this gives him, you know, super strength and all that was never totally clear. But in fairness, they did start out with this guy is nuts.
That is
so
true.
I didn't expect it to make a whole lot of sense. And Reed kind of struggling with the lack of his super smartness. A little overplayed, but it was fun to see.
Well, and ultimately, even though Spider-Man sort of captures him at one point, he escapes, and then Reed kind of just talks him out of it.
Yeah. Well, he realizes that it's actually, you know, leeching energy from everybody and going to kill him.
Yeah.
Which was not Everyman's intent. He was trying to free them and make their lives better, not kill them.
Yeah.
But it did end on a little bit of a kind of a weird note, and you know, Reed getting his you know, super smarts back through, you know, a convenient techno-gadget sort of a thing that's not well explained.
No, a giant cannon that he happens to have been working on from the beginning.
Was that what he was working on at the beginning? I thought they had just
paired up. It looks similar. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And that sums up a bit of the plot on this one. You just kind of roll with it. It's a good story. It's nice to see these two teaming up.
Yep.
I think there's a lot more you could do with this pairing than was done here, but they did a good job with it. And this, you know, is an easy lead into, well, let's bring in the rest of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, sort of.
Sort of. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought this was all right.
Mm-hmm.
The next issue?
Yeah.
Not so much.
It's a comic booky common thing. It's like time travel. When my wife hates anything with time travel because there's too many of these ways out, and that's kind of how this felt with the robots and the hypnosis or whatever the explanation here was.
A time travel story that undoes itself, that's just part of the genre.
Exactly.
A Spider-Man Fantastic Four team-up that technically doesn't have the Fantastic Four or even Spider-Man after about page 3.
Yes.
This is just a Reed Richards story.
Yes.
And not a great one at that.
No. And an antagonist who ends up isn't really there. Well, half of an antagonist pair that's not really there either.
Yeah. The part for me, other than what I feel was a bait and switch, of we're going to have them team up, and Spider-Man leaves at the top of page 3, and page 2 is essentially a recap of the previous issue.
Yep.
So, for a Spider-Man book, I'm not really getting Spider-Man. Not cool. the whole bit with the Fantastic Four turning out not to be there. Even less cool, when we get to, I forget which page it was, but as things are kind of, you know, Reed's figuring it all out and stuff. Yeah, there it is, on page 21. So just...
next to the last page.
Literally the next to last page, you're right. There's a caption offering a no prize for the first reader who can compile a list of all the sneaky clues of why this wasn't what it all seemed to be for the entire issue.
Yes.
A no prize is literally that. You get an empty envelope. There is no prize. But this is basically, we think we left some clues. Can you guys tell us what we might have done to to convince you that this was fair play? I mean, I saw that and I'm like, come on. If there was at least this is how it all played out and Reed was explaining it there at the end, maybe. But to not even do that and to leave it as an exercise, literally an exercise for the readers.
Yes.
I didn't go over well.
On the next page, the bottom sequence with the watch or the locket or whatever that is, and the mother, she's not really there either then, this whole thing. He's Norman Bates here, and this whole thing's just weird.
Yeah, Faust was being taunted by somebody who wasn't there.
Yes.
But the other thing is, if you go back two pages earlier to page 20, you've got the guy who's pretending to be Spider-Man.
Yep.
I don't know if that was supposed to be Everyman or somebody else or what was going on there, but after that top panel on that page, he's gone.
Yeah, no.
You know, and it's not like he was doing a great Spider-Man impersonation. I mean, he fooled Reed for a bit, which is shocking. Yeah, the more I read of this, the less I liked this one.
Yeah,
it wasn't what it set out to be.
Yeah, this one was my least favorite of the four, no doubt about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're going to have some that are a swing and a miss, and this was definitely in that category. And you're going to have that in any title, and when you've got a title that's got some of the built-in limitations of we've got to keep switching out the co-stars every issue and stuff like that, team-up books like this are a little more prone to it sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a two-part story. I didn't like some of the writing, but again, they were imaginary tales. These are things that comics have done for years. It's not that shocking.
Well, but that's the thing, is it's not time travel. It's not an imaginary tale. It actually happened. It's just it was a unreliable narrator for the story, essentially, for most of it.
Yeah.
And then they try to kind of, you know, worm their way out of it at the end with a quote-unquote twist that we've got to figure out how they put in there. I don't know. It's not unique to this issue for sure. You're right on that.
Yeah. You know, it is what it is. Like I said, I didn't think it was great, but sounds like you liked it even less than I did.
I would say that is probably quite accurate. I will say the saving grace it had is the art wasn't too bad, and it's a 60-cent cover price.
Yep.
So even, you know, back then, I would be able to say, oh, well, okay, you win some, you lose some. You know, these days, if I'd paid $3.99, $4.99 for something like this, I'd have been much more upset.
Well, on the bright side, these days, you wouldn't have paid $3.99. You would have paid $12, $15 for the 5-issue arc of this.
Oh, if this had played out over multiple issues?
Well, it sort of did.
Irate wouldn't even begin to describe it.
Like I said, it sort of did. It was a 2-issue story.
Yeah, but you're right. These days, they would not have done this as a single thing. This would have been a 6-issue arc.
Easily.
And even if half of it was the equivalent of the first issue we got here,
yeah,
it still would have been at least a full issue or two of us thinking we were getting the Fantastic Four when we weren't.
Yes.
And yeah, that would not have gone over well with me. So again, I think they could have and should have done better with this, but again, you win some, you lose some.
Yep.
Now, this next issue, 134, again, we switched to Bill Mantlow as the writer and such. We've got Jack of Hearts. And it's funny because typically you could sum up these issues as Spider-Man and so-and-so versus so-and-so. And here, as best I could tell, what that would wind up being is, well, obviously Spider-Man and Jack of Hearts versus S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, sort of. You could also argue, I guess, Spider-Man and Marcy Kane, is it, against Jack of Hearts?
Yeah, I guess. You could argue that. It's just for quite a bit of it, Spider-Man was in a de facto team-up with Jack of Hearts, even though he didn't really know who he was at the time.
Yes.
And this whole bit with the Jack of Hearts, whose powers are out of control and stuff like that, having been essentially trapped for months by, I guess, S.H.I.E.L.D.? It's been literally decades since I had read this, and I had forgotten that this led into the Jack of Hearts miniseries, which I enjoyed at the time. I recall enjoying at the time. Not that I recall specifics of it. This was just kind of a weird thing, because it doesn't cast S.H.I.E.L.D. in the best of lights.
Not at all. There's nothing in here that makes S.H.I.E.L.D. seem like the good guys at all.
Yeah. And using this as kind of a launch pad for a miniseries and almost inverting good guys and bad guys almost, kind of weird.
Yep. Now, this, I do have to mention, not only is it written by Bill Matlow, the art is done by Ron Frenz, who's one of my favorite artists, so I really enjoyed at least looking at this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ron Frenz is just a terrific artist. He's done quite a bit of great stuff over the decades.
Yep.
And Jack of Hearts is just such a wild kind of costume design.
That it is.
And again, the powers are unique. He's not just your run-of-the-mill superhero.
No.
And then some of the stuff we get with the various S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and whatnot in their armor and stuff, the Unilens battle armor or something. It's like, I don't recall that. I don't know if it was ever seen again, but, you know, hey, they gotta have something. And those things just look bulky and not particularly agile.
No. Dumb question. Do you know does any of this story of kind of how he becomes Jack of Hearts exist somewhere else?
Yes, he existed prior to this. I think he originally showed up, I want to say in...
Well, he originally showed up, believe it or not, according to Wiki anyways, he was created by Matlow and Keith Giffen in Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 22.
Mm-hmm. But he'd also shown up in, I think it was like Hulk, Iron Man, and a few other places. He later became an Avenger.
I guess my part is other than this kind of exposition about him and Marcy Kane and how he abandoned her, does that story appear anywhere else that you're aware of?
I know we get his origin and stuff. I don't know if we get her.
Got it.
In any of that, or if she was created here to kind of spin off into the miniseries.
And, okay, do you remember enough about the miniseries? I mean, I'm assuming that plays out from there and she's trying to help him or something, which is where this seems to end?
I'm pretty sure she was trying to help him. For some reason, I'm thinking there was a bit of a space contingent to the miniseries. But again, I read that back when it came out, so...
Yeah.
You know what, 35 years ago now?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. It was 4 issues, and as I recall, it was fun. It was, again, different than a lot of their other stuff on the rack in a good way.
Yeah.
And this is one where we get a lot of info dump, both of what had happened in the past, but even some of what's happening now, like how he, you know, was able to escape and get past the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, you know, at the house early on. You know, they're looking for somebody who flies. He's going to steal a car and drive it. So there's, again, a lot that goes on in this issue. You know, we get some recap of what had been going on with Peter Parker, some recap of what had happened with, you know, Jack back in his college days. And again, I don't know how much of that, like you said, was set up before this or how much was just created here. It feels like something that very well may have been created here.
It could have been.
I would think... If it had happened elsewhere...
It'd be editor's notes.
Either editor's notes or somebody in the background that we would recognize.
Mm.
Be it, you know, from Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, from Iron Man, from, you know, wherever. But, you know, I thought this was a good issue. And, again, one of the sorts of things this kind of title can do is reestablish a character like this, again, right before you launch him out into a miniseries or something like that. Or test the waters to see if there's enough interest for a miniseries.
Yeah.
And that was something that a couple of other books over the years had done quite a bit. Quasar under Mark Gruenwald and Captain America, both of those would just pull some characters, just, you know, they'd been put on the shelf and hadn't been used for a decade or more or whatnot. And, hey, let's bring them back for an issue and see if anyone cares. And tell a good story in the process.
Yeah.
And this definitely was a fun story. We got to understand, you know, Jack's plight and what's going on with him.
Yeah, and like you said, it doesn't do any favors to S.H.I.E.L.D., that's for sure.
Yeah, Yeah.
I mean, even when Spider-Man kind of first, when he goes back to the building, I mean, he comes in and assumes S.H.I.E.L.D. of the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not until I think he's taken one out and he notices the emblem on the helmet. Like, this is why heroes wear costumes, so they're easy to recognize. They just plastered, you know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. logo on that armor. Wouldn't have been a problem. So, but yeah, it just shows how in the span of, you know, four issues, we get, I think, fairly different stories and different types of stories, different intents of the story.
Yeah.
You know, this, again, to launch a miniseries, others to, you know, establish one or two new characters and build on what had gone before.
Yeah. These were fun. These were, I mean, none of them kind of feel like they're going to have lasting impacts, but like you said, this led into a miniseries. But they were fun. I mean, these are the type of issues, particularly like as a kid, you could have and just read over and over. And they were just fun. And there was a whole story there. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even the two-parter with Mr. Fantastic and stuff, either part you could read in and of itself, and it was a solid read.
Absolutely.
You know, the comics of this era, when they were done right, and often they fell into this category, had a beginning, middle, and end of something in the issue that felt whole enough that you felt you got your money's worth, yet you knew were part of a larger tapestry, not only of that title, but of that universe.
Yep.
And that what was going on here in some way mattered to the participants of the story.
Yep.
Not like it was, oh my God, an earth, you know, turning moment, you know, earth-shattering moment for them or something, but you know, Spidey would remember the next time he bumped into Jack of Hearts. Oh, yeah, I remember you from here or something.
And again, I don't know when they were released, but yeah, these are all cover dated kind of summer and early fall, and it looks like 1983.
Yeah, 83. Yeah, again, it was some good stuff, and I just enjoyed comics from this era because, you know, you didn't have to remember what you'd read six issues back to understand the payoff of the current issue where, you know, again, it had been set up 6 months ago or something.
Exactly. No, these were just fun, and you could just read them. Mm-hmm. Knowing a little bit about who some of them were helps, but even if you didn't, it didn't matter that much.
Well, and if it was important, they clued you in with a little bit of a recap or something like that. You know, they were trying to play fair and have this be a fulfilling installment in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah.
So that's a lot of what I think is lost with modern comics.
Yeah. Well, and even that, like, going back a few issues, that Everyman page where it kind of shows him with the other costume and mm-hmm. the battle with Captain America and, you know, all that stuff.
Well, that not only gets you up to speed on this character has a backstory, but it makes you realize, again, there's a lot going on in the Marvel Universe. There's things to go explore. This was the era when comic shops were really starting to pop up more and more places. They had back issue bins. And if you said, I'm curious about that story, let me go chase down that issue of Captain America or where this guy showed up in, you know, whatever other title and stuff. Not going to say it'd necessarily be easy to find the issues, but it was certainly possible and plausible to find them. And, you know, again, it wasn't crazy expensive back then. So you could, you know, fill out your collection that way. You know, as you're reading titles going forward, you could be bouncing back, you know, into the back issue bins and picking up some cool stories there. And again, you only needed to find the one to read it, you know, front to back and get a full story.
Yep. Looking back, it looks like that Captain America title anyways is cover dated March of 82. So it wasn't, at this point, it was just over a year old. It wasn't like it was ancient history.
Yeah, so that should have been reasonably easy to go find at a lot of stores if they had a decent back issue selection.
Yeah.
And let's face it, at that point in time, a decent back issue selection would be, I want to say, 30 or 40 long boxes. I mean, it didn't take that much to have, you know, a copy of, you know, a lot of issues of most of the titles.
Yep.
Because there weren't as many titles coming out back then.
And there was only one version. You know, you didn't have to have seven.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to have 17 cover versions. You just had the one.
Yeah, it's not, well, which volume of Marvel Team Up and which volume of Captain America?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And because they were still then current titles, the back issues of those volumes were still relevant.
Yes.
So, yeah, very different time. But definitely some fun stuff. Like I said, I thought it'd be fun to take a look at a couple issues of Marvel Team Up. some point we may want to do that with DC Comics Presents and or Brave and the Bold.
Absolutely. Yeah, these were a blast. Like I said, I got nitpicks and there was one issue I didn't particularly care for. Overall, it was a blast reading these. So thank you for suggesting them.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I had fun too.
Yep.
Anything else?
I'm good.
Cool.
The November previews came out on October 27th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 168 is the morning of Saturday, November 6th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.